is Joakim Noah of the Chicago Bulls, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Give it all you got, take your very best shot, and may the best team win. The time is now, the name of the game is action. They're on the floor and they're ready to score, so let the game begin. And let's see how the ball's gonna bounce today. Welcome to NBA.
Playoffs?
Tim Gallagher, NBA historian, basketball historian, joins Bullseye again. Love to have you on, Tim, during these playoffs. You just provide so much knowledge for the Bullseye listeners. So I'd like to start out with, before we get into the playoffs and the preview of the Western Conference Finals, I'd like to get a little bit into Scott Skiles' unexpected exit from the Magic. I'm a huge Skiles guy. I think he's a fantastic coach. I think he did a great job there. I think he did a great job with the Bulls overall. Everywhere he's gone, Milwaukee, et cetera. What's your take on Skiles overall, and what do you feel, what were the real reasons why he left?
Right, well, I'm a big Skiles fan as well. Going back to his playing days at Michigan State, and even recall seeing some footage of him leading his Plymouth, Indiana high school team to the state tournament. I don't know if that's on YouTube anywhere, but he kind of was the team leader to win an Indiana State championship back when all the schools were in, all in the same tournament. So I've always admired his grit and toughness, and he's obviously had success a few different places in the NBA. So I was really surprised that with that departure, because it looked like he was the right guy to kind of get Orlando out of the lottery doldrums that they've been in, and a core group of young talent. So that was really shocking news to see that. And I heard a couple different thoughts on what had happened. And one was that he sort of bypassed the normal hiring process, which happens in business all the time, but he knew the ownership from when he was a beloved player for the Magic. And so when he expressed his interest in the job, I think it sidestepped some of the normal protocol in terms of the interview process and how he was hired, and maybe created a little friction with the general manager. And I know Skiles is someone that certainly wants to win now. You know, that's always kind of been his mindset, even though he's probably better known for taking a young team that's, you know, maybe struggled and building them into a winner, you know, just with his mindset. But I think a few things happened after Orlando was off to a pretty good start. And when they traded Tobias Harris and Channing Frye, or, you know, got rid of those two guys and then basically replaced them with two players, Brandon Jennings and Ilyasova. Jennings and Ilyasova played for Skiles in Milwaukee. He was familiar with them. They're more veteran players that he knows. And Tobias Harris went on and played pretty well for Detroit and got them into the playoffs, and, you know, was one of those teams that nudged the Bulls out of the way. And then Channing Frye is, you know, looking like a fountain of youth, hitting three-pointers for Cleveland. So those guys obviously still had some mileage left in them, and, you know, could help a team win. So I think kind of a combination of player moves and the way he got into the job initially, and I'd also heard something about his dissatisfaction with the young backcourt they had, Elfrid Payton and Oladipo, and how convinced he was they could really win with those two guys, even though they're young and developing players. So, you know, Orlando's kind of been stuck where they are for a while. I did see a marked improvement over this past season under Skiles in his first year. So it'll be interesting to see that. It certainly was a unexpected type of a situation, but as we talked about on the last podcast with the coaching carousel, there's some good names out there with, you know, Vogel still. I haven't looked at the news wires here in the last couple of hours, but it looks like Vogel's still available and David Blatt's still available, Kevin McHale, Nate McMillan. So there's some people out there that I would think would be a good fit for Orlando. But again, they've showed some improvement this past year, but they really need somebody to kind of get that thing to the next level.
Absolutely. I'm sorry, Eric. Go ahead.
No, that was it.
So I want to follow up with that with some discussion regarding, first of all, the unexpected, in my opinion, I think in yours too, victory of the Thunder over the Spurs last night, number one. I don't know if you had a chance to watch that game, and I really felt that Westbrook was the man down the stretch. I mean, the Spurs really fought valiantly to get that to, you know, almost single digits, and he hit a three the few minutes left that really to me was the dagger, and then followed up with a couple, you know, just incredibly athletic drives that led to either, you know, free throws or another big basket. The guy is just a force of nature, and I think I felt this way for a while. He surpassed Durant as the alpha on that team, and Durant's the beta. So, like your opinion on the game overall, and number two, Durant and Westbrook and their roles on the Thunder.
Sure. Well, I definitely watched it. I thought that was must-see TV for a basketball fan last night, but I really expected the Spurs to play better, and you know they did continue to compete and battle when they were way down. They were down, you know, what, almost 30, and they somehow made it a game and got it under 15 and close to 10, I think, on occasion or two. And I agree with you on those pivotal plays. I remember that three by Westbrook, which was kind of the dagger, because the Spurs were still kind of hanging in there, and you know, a miracle was possible. Another play I thought was pretty pivotal was when Duncan took it to the rack. It looked like he was going to try to dunk the ball, and then Ibaka blocked it, got it to Westbrook in the open court. Durant's running alongside him for a dunk, and you know, that whole shift, you know, I thought was also very pivotal, and whatever glimmer of hope the Spurs had, it was gone at that point. So I think I was mostly surprised how much OKC improved over the course of the season. They had a few low points, but you know, again, they kind of were lurking in the shadows way behind Golden State and San Antonio. But you know, again, in a season where teams weren't putting up some unprecedented winning records like the Warriors and Spurs were, you know, a lot of teams would, you know, consider that OKC team an elite team, but they kind of, again, were second fiddle to those other teams. I thought the Spurs' age really showed in that series as well. And, you know, the more I thought about it, the Spurs seemed like a team that was built for the regular season in terms of, you know, there's stretches where you can rest guys and sit guys and manage the minutes of older players. Obviously, we're talking about Duncan and Ginobili, Parker, David West is, you know, an older veteran as well. Andre Miller on that team that got some minutes last night. So being able to manage those players and those minutes during the regular season is a little easier than when you're playing every other night, more or less, against the same team, and that same team, OKC, with young, athletic players. And I'm thinking of Steven Adams and Cantor, and those guys were just beasts on the boards. And you kind of know what you're going to get with Durant and Westbrook. Ibaka is kind of, you know, leveled off a little bit in terms of his contribution, but still a very effective player. But when you get that kind of production out of Adams and Cantor, Dion Waiters hit some big shots. Foy, you know, showed some things in some limited minutes. So I just think I really thought Adams and Cantor were the X factors, and you know, impressed with Billy Donovan too. I mean, this is his first year as an NBA coach, right? So there's a big learning curve. Obviously, we saw that with Hoiberg in Chicago. There's a lot to learn, no matter how bright you are and what kind of staff you have. So I was really impressed with Billy Donovan's poise and adjustments and the way he managed that team and got them to improve. And you know, I was thinking about Billy Donovan. He was kind of always thought of as the protege of Rick Pitino. And here in one season in the NBA, Billy Donovan kind of surpassed. Pitino was in the NBA two different times with the Knicks and then later with the Celtics. And here in one season, Billy Donovan surpassed his mentor in terms of getting to a conference finals, right? Pitino was never able to do that.
Great point. So how do you feel about, like, you know, the Westbrook and Durant combination? Do you feel that it's still Durant's team, or it's become more Westbrook's team, or do you think they do a pretty good job of just, you know, working off each other?
Yeah, boy, I think it's almost as close to two alpha dogs as you could have. I think you maybe give the edge to Westbrook just because Westbrook has that crazy fire in his eyes, right? He just plays so hard and so he's just so intense, where, you know, of the two, certainly Durant's a little more laid back, but and I'm not saying he doesn't play hard, I just in terms of their personalities and leadership styles. So I'd probably give Westbrook the slight edge as the alpha dog there, but it seems like the chemistry between the two of them, and you know, probably like in Chicago, there people are trying to look for friction between Jimmy and Derrick Rose, right, and trying to create something that maybe wasn't there. I think there's probably been a lot of that in OKC, where people are trying to look for something to just make a news headline, but I think those two have really blended nicely together, and I'm wondering if this victory to get to the conference finals might propel Durant into staying at OKC. You know, I wondered if they had a disappointing playoff exit, and I think beating the Spurs, who are certainly one of the elite teams ever, and to beat them pretty handily, and with this young core of players that OKC's built, and I'm talking about the improvement of Adams and Cantor in particular, that might be enough to keep Durant there. I'd say before this series, I was thinking Durant, I would, if I had to put money on it, I'd say he'd probably leave. But the fact that OKC's done so well and improved so much just over the course of the season, it makes me wonder about that. You know, one other thought in that game last night, late in the game, I don't know if you noticed, the Spurs had two 40-year-old players in the game, Tim Duncan and Andre Miller. So I don't know when and if that's ever happened in the NBA in a critical playoff game to have two players that are 40 out on the court and in a game still in the balance. But that was kind of interesting. And if that's what the Spurs felt was their best chance to win, you know, that's kind of concerning, right? Just with that kind of age and that kind of mileage when you're going against world-class athletes like Russell Westbrook. And I'd probably put Steven Adams in that class now too, right? For his size, the way he runs and his physical strength is
incredible.
He's an elite athlete.
He played fantastic this series. He really impressed the heck out of me. And the guy is an absolute force on the defensive end and just a really active player who does a lot of things well. Now, looking forward now, OKC here, Thunder versus Golden State. You know, what do you foresee in this series, and do you think the Thunder can pull off the upset?
Well, I still am going to go with Golden State. You know, it's almost impossible to pick against them. And obviously, the way Curry has come back now and just the way he propelled the team to victory on that comeback game, in the overtime, but you know, I think that has kind of given them a second win and a spark that's going to get them past OKC, and then having the home court advantage too, it does really mean something. I mean, you know, elite teams obviously can find ways to win on the road, but I think it's so hard to win at Golden State that home court advantage is going to play into things as well. Also, I think, especially compared to the Spurs, the Warriors have a younger team and can throw a lot of different looks at some of those lineups that OKC would put out there. But if Adams and Cantor play at that level, that is going to make things tough for the Warriors. So it'll be interesting to see. I know Bogut got nicked up a little bit in that last game, so I don't know what his status is, but I would think to bang around with Steven Adams and with Cantor, they're going to need Bogut, and you know, maybe not always rely on the small ball. So I'm going to say Golden State in five games. So even though OKC does have a lot of momentum, you know, the other thing I was thinking about with Curry, and we've praised him in a lot of different ways over the last year or so. We've been doing the podcast with me on as a commentator. But one thing I was thinking about, and I'm a big student of Pistol Pete Maravich, and we've talked about him and the history of the game, but I think Steph has blended that flair of Pistol Pete with the kind of what we'd call, let's say, the Celtics unselfishness and winning culture. So I know I've read a lot and studied a lot about Pete Maravich, and his father, Press Maravich, was his coach. And that was what they kind of always dreamed of when, you know, the 60s and 70s were kind of their heyday, and the Celtics, you know, starting with the Auerbach and Russell, Celtics, you know, all the way through the Celtics' great 70 teams. You know, that was kind of the model of team basketball and winning. And I know Press Maravich always dreamed that Pete could somehow blend that flair with an unselfish winning team. And they were never able to do that, right? So Pistol Pete's career, he put up some incredible numbers and led the league in scoring, but was really never on good teams. And by the time he made it to Celtics at the end of his career, he was just a shell of what he was early in his career as a player, and the Celtics didn't get to the finals the 1 year Pete played there. So I kind of thought about what Curry is doing at Golden State is sort of the unfulfilled dream that Press and Pete Maravich had, and we're seeing it unfold before our eyes. So kind of that blend of showmanship and flair, but integrated into a winning culture and unselfishness. So it's an interesting formula, and I've certainly been enjoying it.
What about I'd like to discuss, if possible, a little bit about the NBA Chicago Combine. I'm not really familiar with what goes on there. I know it's pre-draft combine where you do a lot of measurements. Are you familiar with it? And what exactly do teams really try to do at this combine?
Right. Well, a lot of players get invited in, and they do go for measurements. And I know it's one of the fun things to look at players' wingspans, and you see what their height is and then what their wingspan is and what their standing vertical is and some of those other measurements, what they measure with shoes and without shoes. So it's kind of fun just to look at all those numbers just for comparison and speculation purposes. And I know Jay Billis kind of gets teased a lot with his emphasis on wingspan, but I think we've seen with players like Kawhi Leonard and Draymond Green, and those are certainly statistics that do mean something, especially in today's NBA where you've got these hybrid players and things they can do. But there's also scrimmaging, so all the teams will send scouts and GMs and look at a group of players, and I'm not sure the exact number. It's probably 60 or so players that get invited. Not all players elect to scrimmage. And I know in one of the ESPN channels has been showing some of the scrimmages, and I'm sure they'll show it over the next few days and weekends, even repeats of what has already been played. So it's just a way to see players compete. And I would be certain that almost all of these players have been scouted to a certain level on their college teams, but this is a way to see them in a little different environment. And, some players like Ben Simmons or Sabonis or Brandon Ingram, elect not to play. I'm guessing their agents are advising them that, that their stock's not going to get any higher, their value's not going to improve by playing. So, and they may also have been, more or less promised spots. We don't know what the exact lottery order is going to be just yet, but, there's some players that could be pretty assured of, they're going to be a lottery pick or a top five pick, and so they feel like it's too risky to actually play. So there's a few players that aren't there and aren't competing. And, I'm pretty sure of all the players that were there last year, the only one that played, so it was there beyond just measurements, they competed in the, five-on-five. And the only player that's really impacting anything in what were the final eight teams, and now we're down to fewer, obviously, with the elimination of the Spurs last night, but Norman Powell, who's playing for Toronto. So it was an ability for him to showcase what he could do. But again, he's the only player that I could think of the eight teams that were in the final eight of the NBA playoff picture that was in Chicago and went through all that. So despite all these guys being in there and being evaluated and being measured, at the end of the day, there's only one guy from last year's group that really impacted anything and is still playing a meaningful role on a team in the playoffs. So while it's interesting to observe, and we'll get into our draft coverage, I'm sure, on future podcasts, it's really just a good networking event, I guess, and for these players to get some additional exposure. The other key element in it is if a player hasn't contracted with an agent, so they still have college eligibility left and they haven't contracted with an agent, they're able to get evaluated. And if they don't feel like they're guaranteed of a first-round selection or to be selected, they've got the ability now to go back to college. So the NBA's kind of worked with the NCAA and kind of cleared up those rules that enable a player to kind of test the waters. Now, again, if they've signed with an agent, it's over. They don't have an opportunity to go back to college. So So there's going to be some players that may maybe play okay or play well, but may get the advice that, well, if you come out next year, it looks like you could be a lottery pick. This year, you maybe could go in the second round, right? So with that kind of evaluation, you'd think most players would decide to go back and refine their skills another year, have the college experience, and enter the draft then after they've graduated or finished their eligibility. So there's quite a few other things that go on in terms of just drills and, you know, speed and agility type measurements and things like that. But I think for the elite players, most of the lottery type players, they're not going to be competing in the 5-on-5. They're there just to be measured, or some of them elect not to go at all.
Tim, you attended some event, I recall, pretty recently. It was a basketball event, and we never had a chance to discuss it. Was it an Adidas event? I can't recall.
You know, it was actually presented by East Bay and then Ball is Life. So it was a high school All-American game, kind of in the same light of the McDonald's game. But they played it out in Long Beach, California, a little north of where I am, at Long Beach City College. So not quite a large NBA arena like the McDonald's game at the United Center. So it was kind of fun to see a lot of these players in a small junior college gym, you know, which is probably the size of, you know, a lot of big high school's gyms. And, quite a few big names were on hand. One player that some of the listeners might have seen and noticed in the McDonald's All-American game was Lonzo Ball, who was USA Today Player of the Year. He's going to UCLA next year. And he's one of the more compelling players I've ever seen, which, and I'm not saying that lightly, but I was trying to think of an analogy of watching him play. So he's about a 6'5 point guard. This high school, Chino Hills, was the top-rated high school team in the country. He's got two younger brothers that are on the team with him, so it's quite a circus watching these guys play. I've gotten to see him play in person a couple of times. And so Lonzo played, which for me, watching him play anytime, anywhere, is a real treat. And the analogy I finally came up with, I was trying to explain to some of my friends and other basketball people an analogy of what it's like watching Lonzo Ball play. And there's a little bit of a dash of Jason Kidd, a little dash of Curry, a little dash of Magic Johnson, in that he's a point guard, and really he can dominate a game without scoring. So, and the other thing is just kind of the flair and style that he plays with. And kind of the best analogy I could come up with was actually a football player. And the example I used was Russell Wilson. So I think most of the listeners probably follow the NFL
right,
to some degree. And the way Russell Wilson plays quarterback in the NFL, which is unique and different and with flair, and that's kind of how it is with Lonzo Ball running a team from the point guard spot. So that'd be a player to keep your eyes on as he moves on to UCLA, and I assume he'll probably be a one and done. A couple other players that were really impressive. One is Miles Bridges, who's originally from Flint, Michigan. He actually played high school at Huntington Prep, which is in West Virginia, where Andrew Wiggins and a number of other elite players go to probably refine their academics and you know, just, you know, get ready for the next level. So he's a 6'7" forward going to Michigan State, left-handed, kind of I kind of compared him to almost an Aaron Gordon with a jump shot. So he's an incredible athlete, strong, athletic, but a good shooter as well. So he'll be a real treat to watch at Michigan State. A couple others that were notable. There's a guard out of Brooklyn, New York, named Raleigh Elkins, that's going to Arizona, as well as a wing player, Terrence Ferguson, who actually won the dunk contest that they had. They had a dunk contest and a three-point contest. So Terrence Ferguson out of Dallas, Texas, and he's going to Arizona also. The MVP of the game was Mustafa Heron, who's out of Connecticut. He's going to Auburn. But a number of other players going to UConn, Kansas, Texas, a couple other UCLA signees. So a real star-studded event with a lot of fun and interesting players to watch.
That's great. That's really great to hear. You know, Lonzo Ball sounds like he really impressed you. You've been going these for a long period of time. Who are the best players that really stick out in your head, maybe on, you know, five guys that you could pick or that really just blew you away at that time and then either had a huge degree of success later on in the professional game or somehow were waylaid and did not make it to the pros?
So seeing them play at the high school level, you mean, and projecting where they might end up?
Exactly. Like, did you see Jason Kidd play in one of these games back in the day? I mean, I'd like to hear who are, like, the high school players you've seen in the past that just blew you away, and then they ended up being something in the pros, and then maybe a guy who was just incredible and didn't make it for whatever reason.
Sure. Well, there's a couple players that come to mind, and every year here in San Diego, and I've been here about 30 years, they have something called the Holiday Classic at Torrey Pines High School, where they bring in teams from all over the country. And so as you mentioned that, there's a couple of names that come to mind. And in the more recent past, Kyrie Irving's high school team, St. Patrick's, came out and played. And they also had Michael Kidd-Gilchrist was on that team, who, of course, is playing for Charlotte in the NBA. Although he's had some injury problems lately.
Sure.
But seeing Kyrie Irving play in that tournament, I remember thinking, who dropped off Chris Paul and gave him a St. Patrick's jersey? Because he was so dominant and such in command of the game that you know, Kyrie Irving, it wouldn't take a genius or a brilliant scout to see where he was headed. You know, some other players that I saw in that same tournament that also you could see right away that they were going to be NBA players, Jrue Holiday, who's on the Pelicans now, DeMar DeRozan played in that tournament. You know, going back to some of the earlier days of that tournament, I remember Stephon Marbury, when he played for Brooklyn Lincoln High School, and when they came out and played, he was, you know, people still talk about him playing in that tournament the year they came out here and, you know, hitting jump shots, you know, a step or two over half court. And I'm not talking shot clock winding down or desperation, just, you know, he had that kind of range, kind of the things you see Curry doing now. You know, but at the high school level, Marbury was doing that. And he had some flashes in the NBA, but probably didn't really pan out where, you know, you thought he might be one of the all-time great guards. There was another kind of a legendary player out here out west. One last one I'll mention is Shea Cotton, who did end up at Alabama and played overseas for a long time. But he was kind of a man-child. Kind of reminded me some of Miles Bridges, who I just mentioned from the Ball is Life game that's going to Michigan State, but never made the NBA. And I know he's, again, one of those legends that, you know, never quite made it to where you thought he would. But I know he's working with youth in Los Angeles now and still around. But, yes, Shea Cotton would be another name. So those are a few that I saw early on, and some that lived up to what I thought, and others that maybe didn't quite get there.
Great stuff, Tim. Really appreciate it, man. Thanks for giving us your time again. We're already at 30 minutes, and I really appreciate everything that you've contributed today. Really looking forward to that Western Conference final. So your official prediction is Golden State. How many games?
I'd say in 5 games.
Golden State in 5. We're going to hold you to that. And then once we find out who the Cleveland is going to be playing, we'll do another show on that. So looking forward to talking with you very soon. In the interim, all the best to you, brother. Have a fantastic weekend.
Thanks, Fred. Always a pleasure.
Talk to you later, Tim.
Bye.
Bye-bye.